Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the TV and movie writers' strike is heading toward its second week with no resolution in sight over the issue of how to pay them for work that appears on the internet. Between that and Broadway being shut down, people might soon find themselves playing Scrabble or being forced into face-to-face conversations with their families. Let's just hope the text message carriers don't walk out next. With me now is an all-star panel of striking writers. Peter Gwynn, a writer for the Colbert Report. John Oliver, who you probably know as a correspondent on The Daily Show. He is also a writer and is on strike. And Brian Stack, who writes for Late Night with Conan O'Brien. Welcome, all of you, to WNYC. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having us,
yeah,
Brian.
Thanks for having us.
Peter, let me start with you. Do you have like a Twitch response? You know, you hear the president or O'Reilly say something you think is dumb and your fingers start air typing?
We haven't done a lot of air typing yet. The one that finally got me was the story last week when all the items went missing from the Reagan Library. That one got me a little bit because I'm sure if the show was on, Stephen would admit that he stole them. But that was the one that sort of got me. With the rest of this stuff, it's, yeah, you miss the opportunities, but we're also confident that he'll keep saying stuff like that when we go back on the air. So
yeah.
So, we'll make it up.
So John Oliver, maybe John Stewart stole the Reagan Library stuff.
Well, maybe he did. You suggested that. I'm not breaking the strike. Let me say, you wrote that, you scab.
That's it. Oh, God, they're going to take away my after card. How's the strike going? Seriously.
We think it's going pretty well. I mean, from the picket lines, it's going well. We've had great turnout in New York every single day. There's a bunch of us out there on the lines right now, just a huge turnout. We've had a lot of actor support from SAG and AFTRA. As to the negotiations themselves, we're not on the committee.
Our lines are open. Any other writers or anyone who wants to call in, and you don't have to just talk about the strike. If you want to ask Brian Stack what it's like to be a writer for Conan O'Brien, John Oliver what it's like to be John Oliver on The Daily Show,
or Peter Gwynn. It's really something.
I wish he preferred John Oliver.
I didn't ask. You know, I was telling people they could ask if they chose. Or Peter Gwynn from Colbert, 212-433-WNYC. 433-9692. Brian, explain to our listeners how the writers get paid now, because I've heard this figure, 2.5% of something. How does that work? You don't get a salary?
Well, right now you do get a base salary. It's just that typically writers depend on residuals from reruns later on, and it's pretty clear to everyone that eventually having our entire shows on the internet with unskippable ads in them kind of constitute a rerun on their own, and everyone kind of knows that's where the future is for our industry, and the writers just are basically fighting to make sure that they aren't kind of left out totally in the cold from that and trying to protect the interests of future writers. And it's just kind of funny to me when I hear the other side kind of saying, we don't know what it's going to be, because you do hear them in the news, like kind of putting that spin on it, and it's clear that they know it's going to be big and it's important.
Yeah, the residual system is kind of the point of the union a little bit. Like half of the membership of the union is unemployed at any given time, and the money that they're living on is this money that they get paid from residuals, which is, you know, reruns showing those shows again in other media, and it's, you know, the producers are still selling ads when they rerun the show. So they're still making money. So our point is, if they're making money with our product, we should share in that.
This is a TV and movie writer strike. So is it different for a daily show like yours, or maybe I shouldn't say daily show to a Colbert writer, but the pay arrangement must be different for your kind of TV show than for movie writers, yes?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the internet affects everyone, though, because like I know a lot of movie writers are concerned about people being able to download an entire movies of theirs from the internet, and the moguls aren't basically saving on all the shipping and production costs that way, but they don't want to increase the residuals or the royalties on internet downloads. They want it to kind of be treated like a DVD, and so I understand why movie writers would be very concerned about that. DVDs don't really affect a show like ours, but because the union is kind of pursuing the interests of all writers, it kind of affects everyone.
Yeah. Right now, when if you stream a movie online and watch it, the writer doesn't get paid at all. So we're just trying to...
So then is this, and John Oliver, is this about a precedent more than a number, as long as they start paying you in some way for internet use?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I think in, because this is emerging, although it has emerged to a certain extent, it's certainly going to emerge a lot more. I think the kind of degrees of money you're talking about now are probably relatively small. It really is for the future. So it's for our writers' writers and our writers' writers.
And also actors, you know, I think one of the reasons we're getting so much support from them is that we all know that we're just kind of the first union to have our contract expire in this new environment. And the actors know that all these same issues are going to affect them and the directors too. And so that's, I think everyone kind of knows that we're kind of the first ones dealing with it, but it affects everyone.
Mm-hmm. Ben in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. First of all, I just wanted to give my support to your, to the writers. I know everyone in the audience knows that you guys are sort of the unsung heroes, the, where the creativity starts. But I just wanted to say that...
You notice the garble started as soon as he started to say unsung heroes? His line started to break up.
Well, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
I just wanted to mention that...
The networks have their jammers out there, obviously. Go ahead, Ben.
There's still live music. We don't have to necessarily resort to Scrabble, although I have nothing against it.
Right. Okay. Don't have to resort to Scrabble just yet. Jane in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jane.
Hi. I'm for the writers and what they're striking for, but I wanted to ask them what they thought of Charles Ershowitz, if that's how you say his name, in the front page of the art section in the New York Times.
What did he write?
He said, go east, young writers, go east, meaning let's why not write plays?
Oh, that's...
Every word perfectly pronounced. I just hope everyone noticed. That was the best call we've had so far.
Is that your sister?
Every word.
Now I'm going to start talking like that as well.
That's right. It's better.
I'm going to revert to my original New York accent.
We'll all do that.
I don't know, you know, it may be bad for people who want to watch quality television, but this may actually be good for the theater, because instead of going to see Broadway kitsch, people might actually go see off-Broadway plays.
Especially with the stagehands on strike.
Yeah, I think I'm first of all, I have the highest admiration for playwrights, and I think that's an incredibly noble thing to do. I would love to think that I had, first of all, even the ability to do something like that. I've come out of an improv sketch background myself, but I can't think of anything, you know,
do you feel
more
like
admirable than playwright.
It hurts your cause at all that the stagehands at Broadway theaters are on strike at the same time, that it dilutes your message because there's this whole other labor dispute going on that has nothing to do with you but is stealing a lot of the headlines, at least here in New York?
I think, if anything, it enhances it. It sort of builds off of each other, just to sort of raise awareness just in general that, you know, there's a lot of people that go into the entertainment field, and we're all trying to make a living at it, and we just want to share in it, you know, whether it's live theater, TV, movies, you know, the people on the ground level just want to enjoy and share in the success. It's not that we're greedy. We just don't want to be taken advantage
of. If I can just add on the idea of unsung heroes as well. Now, our shows are also made by a lot of people other than writers who have been terribly affected by this strike. So perhaps this isn't maybe talked about quite enough in the media at the moment. We have a staff we're extremely concerned about who contribute immeasurably to the shows that we make, and they at the moment are suffering due to the stance that we are taking.
And it's that very thing that historically I read led Johnny Carson to go back to work during the writer's strike in 1988, mm-hmm. which was actually over similar issues regarding technology of that era, because he was just, you know, felt so bad for all the other people who were working class people being put out of work.
There are serious concerns, but it's a shame that when you care about people that is then able to be manipulated as a weakness on your part. It's not just a shame with this dispute, but in a global sense as well.
Yeah, we're all, I mean, it's a huge concern for all of us that I love the people we work with, the non-writers, the crew, the band, everyone on in our office staff, and we all just want to get back to work.
My guests on WNYC, three striking comedy writers, Brian Stack, who was just speaking from Late Night with Conan O'Brien, John Oliver, the guy who sounds well, foreign.
Perfect. Daily who's show. Speaking perfectly, I think it's what you meant to say.
Daily Show correspondent, who's also a writer, and Peter Gwynn, who writes for Colbert. And Jeff in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you? I just want to say I support you guys. You guys are doing great. But it upsets me when the network news reports on this actor or that actor joining the lines, and they don't report on the issues. What are your opinions?
It seems to be like one of those things that we even noticed this morning, that the cameras, you know, they're so conditioned to just point at a familiar face and a celebrity. And a lot of times it can really help, like, you know, the first day of the strike, just having people like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey out there, you know, they just point the cameras at them, and it can make a real difference because at least they get to kind of speak out about the cause. But you're right, I think a lot of times the real issues do get lost a bit, especially by some papers that I thought would be a little more objective, like the Los Angeles Times have been kind of surprised by what they've left out. Like, there were 5,000 people in front of Fox, you know, putting on a big demonstration on Friday. I don't think it was even in the paper.
It didn't get covered.
Really, because there was no celebrity. I remember a spoof New York Post headline one time that said, you know, nuclear bomb hits America, Michael Jackson, 12 million others die. So it's kind of like that.
Yeah, I think it's just very driven that way, you know.
I don't mind it as much, given that, you know, if it's the network news, these are the companies we're on strike against. So anything that gets them to cover it at all is a victory for us.
What about when a celebrity doesn't join the picket lines? What do you think of the Ellen DeGeneres thing, John?
Well, I don't know the details of it. There are serious concerns about staff, I'll say that. So, I mean, it's really... I think it's very easy to demonize people, but this is a horrendous situation that people are in, and when you do care about your staff, that can be manipulated against you. So I don't know. I think most people would want complete solidarity, but that is sometimes impossible when your conscience is keeping you awake at night over other issues.
It's such a tough decision. I mean, you're basically you have a staff. Our staff is about 80 people. And they've been really supportive of us, and we want to support them back. And for people like Ellen or Carson in the 80s, it sort of gets to a point where they need to make a decision between helping the 80 people that they know or sacrificing helping them in the short term, thinking that maybe all however many thousand of us there are will all get back to work faster. And that's a really tough call,
and you really
can't criticize them either way.
Ken, calling from Burbank. You're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Hi, good morning. I'm a writer and a producer, and I just have a few observations. One of them is my favorite ad on Craigslist this year was written by a writer who's looking to pay someone $10 an hour to pick it for him. And it was so well-crafted that I can't wait to use it in one of my shows. The other is that a couple of people on the negotiating committee are showrunners. They're writers. They are some of the people who I find are the most militant in urging solidarity and urging that the guild does not give in. But they're also the people who are making $3 to $4 million a year on their overall deals running the show. So I find that always sort of interesting, that the young writer or the non-working writer is following the writer who has very little to lose. And perhaps my last point, which is the most pertinent, is up until this year, the DGA, Directors Guild, and SAG, the Actors Guild, always negotiated their contracts before the WGA. And the WGA has always felt that they got the raw end of the deal. And they felt, and writers going back to Bud Schulberg and Disenchanted and F. Scott Fitzgerald always felt like they were disrespected. And this negotiation is as much about fairness as it is about negotiating respect. And for a lot of people, it's more about negotiating respect. And that's the one thing that you cannot negotiate. Writers who want respect have to say, I will no longer write your crap. And stand for something. And not just take a job because it pays.
Ken, I'm going to leave it there, because you've been on a while and we have a lot of stuff to get to, but you make important points. Thank you very much. And I guess sort of related to that, there was a piece in the New York Times yesterday about how the writers are acting like your own scabs in some cases by writing diaries online and op-eds in national papers and, you know, maintaining weblogs and kind of doing the stuff that you would be doing for the networks for free. What'd you think about that?
I think any increase of awareness helps, and especially when it's done with some humor and, mm-hmm. and intelligence. Like, I think some of the viral videos that have been out there have been not only entertaining but great about getting a message across that has been pretty much ignored by a lot of the mainstream media. So I think it's only helped, really. Yeah.
Brian, how do you become a writer? Do they have a major for that at Cornell, or how do you train?
Well, I came out of an improv sketch background myself. I know people come out of such different backgrounds. Some, you know, John was a stand-up, and, mm-hmm. and Peter and I came out of the Chicago improv scene. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But there's a lot of people who come exclusively out of writing. There's really so many different ways to get into it.
Are most comedy writers frustrated stand-ups themselves, John, do you think?
Nope. I think writing is what you do when all the career dreams your parents had for you ebb and die away.
Does your mother call you up and say, it's not too late to become a doctor, you know?
Oh, I think she left that dream a long time ago. But my dad wanted me to be a sportsman, and I've let him down there. And so anything's a disappointment from here.
Yeah, I remember Springsteen saying his mom used to always say, it's not too late to go back to college.
Peter, what did you do before writing for Colbert?
I taught improv in Chicago and then New York, and did just stuff for the stage. It was sketch comedy shows, improv shows.
How does it work? I mean, about as close as I've ever come to seeing comedy written is watching the old Dick Van Dyke Show on television, you know, and that was always like Rob and Buddy and Sally sitting around a room brainstorming, going like, hey, how about this? So is that what you do for Colbert?
A little less animated, but yeah, there's a little more staring at a computer screen than on that. But it is, someone will toss out an idea, and the other person will build on it, and eventually you get something that you think is funny, and someone starts typing.
Brian, how many writers are there for Conan O'Brien?
Well, there are three people that work exclusively on the monologue. I don't work on the monologues myself. I work on the what they call the desk piece and also character and sketch bits that some of the writers like also perform in themselves. And so I work somewhat on topical things, but our show tends to be far less topical than The Daily Show or Colbert, obviously. That's big news for people, I'm sure.
Right. But, so, and how long is the I'm never up that late. How long is the monologue?
Well, the monologue is usually... Conan sometimes calls an audible on that, like on the fly, but it's usually like three or four jokes.
Three or four jokes.
Or
so
five
you have
jokes.
Three writers to write three to five jokes.
Well, they usually have like a whole list of things, and then sometimes their favorite jokes make it in, sometimes they don't. But sometimes they kind of go through the papers, and the rest of us tend to work on the sketch related stuff and the stuff that appears in the middle of the show or character related pieces do our own editing and casting and stuff.
So is there a lot of competition, you know, like Conan's been picking a lot of your jokes this week. I really can't stand you.
Oh, I don't know exactly what the monologue writers go through every day because they're kind of off on their own most of the time. We do have one writer that kind of moves back and forth between our stuff and the monologue, but I've never actually worked on that stuff myself.
Lewis on Staten Island, you're on WNYC with the Striking Writers. Hi, Lewis. Lewis, oh, let me press that button the right way. Hi, Lewis, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Right.
Listen, I'm just curious for the writers and the workers of the stagehands. If a Monet hangs on a wall and I happen to paint that wall, should I share in the profit of that Monet also? I'm
struggling with the analogy here. The Monet hangs on the wall.
Is this a riddle?
And I happen to be the painter that painted the wall that the Monet hangs on. Should I share in that profit?
Well, first of all, please take the Monet down before you paint the wall.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
I don't want to spatter it.
Who's Monet in this analogy? There go the jammers again.
No, I think I know what you're getting at.
Do you really?
Yes, I
doubt
do.
That.
No, I'm going to say I do, and
right.
I'm going to stick to that. No, I think we all are incredibly appreciative of what our stagehands, set designers, casting people, staff people, researchers, everyone at the show is incredibly important to us, and that's one of the reasons this time has been so hard is because it makes me sick to think about these people being potentially laid off or just, there's so many people caught up in the middle of it, and that really is something that I think sometimes in the press too is being played against us a little bit. Like, I think what the Guild is asking for is very reasonable, and I think 10 times out of 10 when people have a chance to actually have the situation explained to them in kind of a clear way, they all seem to get it and understand that.
No negative reactions when you're out there on the picket line?
There sometimes are, like, I think Rachel Axler from The Daily Show said someone yelled, "I hope you all get fired," you know, and I understand. Like, I think as the Entertainment Weekly writer Mark Harris wrote in what I thought was a very honest, accurate piece that the other day said, it sometimes unions like this can be hard unions to love, like, for people outside of them. But I think his article makes a really clear case that what's being asked for is very reasonable and that the other side is being very unreasonable.
You know, one trend that I heard about that seems like it's outrageous is that the studios are striking deals where other parties take a cut of the gross, so that leaves less revenue that actually counts for your 2.5% to be charged against. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that applies, you know, obviously primarily to the film world, and and I know that film writers, I'm sure, would be very concerned about that.
So the biggest stars and directors and producers, according to this New York Times article yesterday, you know, get more of the cut there, and then there's a smaller pie to even take your percentage out of. I don't know, John Oliver, when you see New York City debating $1,000 fines for feeding the pigeons,
yeah,
does it make you want to go back to work?
Well, the pigeons thing, I hadn't seen that. I mean, certainly you are driving me back towards the office now with your amusing pigeon story. But no, everything makes me want to go back to work. Everything. I want to see my friends there. I want to write about Pervez Musharraf. I want this all to be over. There is no part of me that wants to be on strike, even though I 100% believe in the issues that are being debated. I don't want this to be... No one wants to be walking around Battery Park. Not that it isn't an absolutely stunning park. Let me say that right now.
It's a beautiful,
beautiful park. We're really one of the best. Along with Rockefeller Plaza. Great plaza.
Yeah, we all just want to get back to work as soon as possible. We wish this didn't have to happen at all. And I actually thought during the last-minute negotiations that there was possibly going to be a settlement made. And
yeah, it seems so reasonable what we're asking for. I mean, we want to go with these with the producers. We want to work together. You know, if it's about the future of the internet, we are very creative people. We'll come up with some more ideas and make money off the internet.
Now, you know, if it wasn't for the Democratic Party of South Carolina, then your boss would still have a platform.
Yeah, we're actually kind of grateful to them right now.
You are.
It would be horrible if you were on the ticket and we couldn't do anything
about
it.
You must be bummed, right? Didn't you expect to be able to ride that comedy line for months?
We did. We still could. Were we on the air? It was so much fun to run that stuff, and I thought it was a really unique opportunity to sort of be able to look at a presidential campaign from the inside. And
Peter Gwynne writes for the Colbert Report. John Oliver is a correspondent and a writer for The Daily Show. Brian Stack writes for Late Night with Conan O'Brien. They're all on strike. We'll keep checking in with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.